Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We continue our concerns series today, and we have a good one. The concern over the defensive coordinator change. There are a lot of changes in the defensive coaching staff. Here to talk about that with us is Randy Morgan. Randy, how are you doing?
I'm good, Ken. How are you?
Things are going great. We'd rather the Orioles had the sweep against Seattle, but gaining two games in three against what looks to be a rapidly deflating Yankee team is a good news for Baltimore sports.
For sure.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the change in McDonald. Obviously, this concerned a lot of people, the change in what would happen after the Ravens in their inimitable way, I think is the correct word here, have again gone with a succession plan from inside the organization. That was true of Martindale. It was true, obviously, of McDonald himself, and it's now true of Zach Orr.
Yeah, so my first concern going to Orr from McDonald is really the in-game adjustments that McDonald was able to make. He was kind of a wizard with that last year. I looked up some stats last night. We had 2.11 points allowed per game in the third quarter, including the playoff games. There was 12 shutout third quarters, including the last five straight in the playoffs, and we gave up 0 points in the second half in the two playoff games. So, mm-hmm. The concern is, how unique is that to Mike McDonald? How much did Orr learn from him last year in kind of how to do that and what to look for at halftime? Whether or not the team will be able to continue that kind of success under Orr.
Yeah, it's a broad set of things that you'd love to continue success. I did not know that stat, by the way, because those five straight shutouts in the third quarter include a Pittsburgh team where they're very shorthanded. But then much more impressively, the 49ers and Dolphins game where both those – the 49ers had an early lead. The Dolphins had an early lead on the Ravens too, which seems ridiculous now. But they were up, I think, they're threatening to be up 14-7. They actually were up 10-7. I think Tyreek Hill bobbled the ball in the end zone. But then they, of course, lost 56-19 and the two playoff games. That's a very impressive run there. I picked a number of games where he had made good in-game adjustments. That is a skill, no doubt about it, because he's got to see what he's seeing in real time, make those changes. You have a very limited amount of time to do it at halftime and really make the players understand what you're trying to do, but also just drive to drive. He's got to be willing to rule out some things that he might have planned to do that week because it's not working. So I think that's an excellent one. How about the departure of some significant coaching personalities on the team? I mean, Anthony Weaver, to me, a big loss on the defensive line, replaced by Dennis Johnson, who's a first-year coach. And then Denard Wilson is replaced by Doug Mallory. Obviously, the secondary, we went into this time last season thinking, how are we going to get through with this cornerback group we've got? And that ended up being a non-issue. Ronald Darby had a big year. Brandon Stevens had a big year. Humphrey didn't even really end up playing all that much the entire season, and honestly, not that well. He was pretty good when he did. But the other people lost besides McDonald. How big a concern is that to you?
Yeah, I mean, that's concerning. Like you said, this team was very good at dealing with injuries and developing. They've always been good at developing defensive players, but especially last year, some of the guys you just mentioned. And yeah, it's hard to know who is, you know, most responsible or what the responsibility pie is for that between McDonald and the position coaches. You know, so, and, you know, or obviously coming from the linebacker position, you know, how much will that affect the other positions? And with new guys coming in, like you said, Weaver is another big loss. Obviously he was a top defensive coordinator candidate, who got poached. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, being able to coach them up is going to be another concern going into this year. Can we continue to develop those young players? You know, where as the roster gets a little thinner with the money we're paying out for some of our stars, you know, including Lamar, obviously.
Yeah. I know you have a list of these. I don't want to stop you, but go ahead. Yeah.
Sure. So then my next concern is that, you know, or doesn't have any official play calling experience yet at a high level. You know, McDonald, obviously he had kind of the internship at Michigan where he was a play caller there before he came in. So, you know, how much does it take him to get up to speed to that? Is, you know, how is he, you know, again, with those in-game adjustments, you know, how is Orr able to build a game plan and then, you know, adapt to teams on the fly with that? It's obviously going to be a learning experience for any coach, and, you know, coming and doing it your first time, you know, hopefully some of those other coaches that are still there can help with that. But you know, that's a concern.
I would agree. I think I'm very impressed with the Ravens' succession hires over the years. And I'll go back a couple. When they replaced Dean Pease, I thought they were moving too quickly to hire Martindale internally. And Martindale ended up being an outstanding defensive coordinator, so no problem with that. But the third or fourth best in Ravens history at this point, whether you want McDonald ahead of him or not, is a legitimate question. But he's behind Rex Ryan, and he's behind Marvin Lewis, in my book, in terms of the great defensive coordinators of all time. And none of them have been bad. I mean, there's not one Ravens defensive coordinator who's ever been bad. There's a whole bunch of offensive coordinators that didn't work out. Right. But there's not one bad defensive coordinator. And Madison is the guy people would point to. And he was okay. He wasn't bad. The Ravens defense was still good during that time. So they've gone with another succession hire here. And this has been one of the real strengths of not only the Harbaugh coaching era here, but of the entire history of the organization. Billick hired good had a good defensive coordinator succession plan. A bunch of players lost in Nolan, or a bunch of coaches lost rather in Nolan and Del Rio and Lewis himself. But I that gives me hope that the Orr being handled by the same sort of succession plan is going to be more likely to work out on that basis. He at least understands how the Ravens have been running their defense here.
Yeah, I mean, Orr obviously knows, you know, the Raven way. You know, he came up, you know, he was a great, great player when he was with us. And, you know, I had, like you said, with Martindale, I had those same concerns with McDonald because I didn't really know that much about him besides he had been here and then he was at Michigan. And it, you know, going from Martindale, who had been good, you know, his concerns coming from a college guy, you don't know how that's going to translate. And, you know, so I guess the one thing in that case, the decision was the Ravens, right? They decided to move on from Martindale and they had McDonald in mind, obviously. In this case, you know, their hand was forced. They kind of, you know, McDonald was going for head coaching job. They got to let him go. So, you know, they had to, you know, react to that and then, you know, choose their succession plan. And yeah, obviously they had some choices. So they chose Orr over Weaver. So, yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, I tend to have faith in the Ravens to decision makers to make good, you know, pick good people. They know the team, they know their personnel inside and out. And so, you know, hopefully that continues with Orr and, you know, he's the next guy, you know, and then there's the next guy. Right. And I think, like you said, all of those guys, if you look back, you know, found new jobs pretty easily. And most of them, I think, had success after the Ravens too. So, so the next concern I had kind of going along with that is, you know, even when we got McDonald, you know, early on, there was a little bit of an adjustment period and I was kind of worried. You know, I think there was a Dolphins game where they scored a ton of points on us early in his tenure. You know, so there's always going to be an adjustment period for a new coach coordinator. And I'm just wondering with Orr how long that will be, and will that be even longer than it was with McDonald? And how much of that is a concern, because it's going to be a tight division once again. We want to have home field advantage if we can, if possible, even though it didn't work out last year. But so every game matters.
Yeah, I think it's a legitimate concern. There are certain mechanics to the job, and some of that is on Orr's side. I think it's going to be less this year in terms of the players not understanding what's expected of them, because I think expectations are actually going to be pretty similar. Hopefully it will be a 50,000 foot down coaching mentality, which means, again, players understand the big picture before they focus in on what their smaller role is within that defense. I think when you're starting with that base, and particularly if they want to keep that system, which I think, if you look at the offensive coordinator change last year, they kept a lot of the run game concepts from the Roman era. They didn't, they wanted to move on from Greg Roman. They wanted to layer in more to the passing game and improve that side, but they didn't want to throw away everything Roman had done either in terms of developing quality concepts. I think a lot of that will stay with Orr as well. And if for the people who hate John Harbaugh, take a look at how freaking seamlessly the Ravens have changed defensive coordinators and other defensive coaches and rebuilt the staff in a quality manner time after time. I mean, it's just Harbaugh's been around a long time. And yes, I understand a lot of people really thought McDonald was the road to some coaching dynasty. It's a lottery ticket. I mean, McDonald might be a great coach. He might not be. He might be a great defensive coordinator again 5 years from now. And, it'll be sad that the Ravens lost him, but they weren't going to keep him, and you aren't going to keep good people generally who get offered better opportunities. So you just deal with it and rebuild that coaching staff again, hopefully, and hopefully you do as well. And those guys leave too.
Yeah. I mean, the idea of getting rid of Harbaugh has just always been kind of silly to me. I mean, the guy's going to be in the Hall of Fame, and, not to go off to an offensive tangent, but I mean, you talk about transitioning defense coordinators, but how many teams have transitioned their starting quarterback with almost seamlessly, gone and stayed a contender. So, and Harbaugh, he's not old for a coach. I mean, he's got plenty of time left. So, yeah, I mean, it was kind of, I don't ever see that we're just going to go to McDonald and kick Harbaugh out of the can unless he was really wanting to retire. And who knows, down the line, maybe we bring McDonald back if Harbaugh retires. Right.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, McDonald is now signed for, I think, 6 years in Seattle, but yeah.
Right.
I'll go on to the next one here. I think that managing the opposing run pass success was something that is enormous hallmark. That's actually different from other Ravens coordinators in McDonald's column. All right. And it's something I hope Orr can continue. But McDonald really made a choice to de-emphasize run defense for the first time in Ravens history to the benefit of the pass defense. So they went to a lot of starting two high looks. And yes, they rotated out of that, went to a lot of matchup zone to cover sides of the field differently, to show a robber occasionally and with success to take away routes. They did a lot of things that were different on the back end, but most of what they did put more stress on their six or seven guys, the two linebackers and the four guys, outside linebackers and defensive linemen. And that did lead to more level two first contact opportunities and more yardage. They more than made up for that, obviously, in terms of turnovers and reduced yardage in the pass game. And I think that was just managed masterfully last year. It's very different from the Ravens way. The Ravens way for the first 20 seasons, if you've heard on this show many, many times, has been Ravens never allowed 4 yards a carry in that entire period. Well, this last year, they allowed well north of 4 yards per carry. But again, they more than made up for it on the passing game side. And I hope that's something Orr will continue. I think it's a winning strategy for the way the games are played now, even though it can look frustrating as it did for that first drive of the Rams game.
Yeah. And I assume that will be something that Orr continues. And I actually think that's going to become something that we're going to see all over the league. Actually, people following McDonald's lead in that. I mean, everyone who not watches football knows that the passing game has just become more and more important over the last two decades with rule changes and better quarterback play. So, you know, that if you even want to call it a zag there to, you know, emphasize stopping the pass, was a huge key in the Ravens defense being so good last year. And I think, you know, also that goes along with some of the personnel they have. You know, the ability to play Kyle Hamilton kind of in between there in that nickel role. You know, so with those pieces still in place, you know, I would expect Orr to continue that on. And like I said, I think you'll see it all over the league, actually. So. So with that, another concern I had is, you know, defensive regression. It's, you know, normally defenses regress to the mean statistically year to year. Like, if you read Football Outsiders, they talk about this a lot when they're previewing the next year, you know, offense is more stable. Defense tends to regress because things like turnovers are variable. You know, and there's, you know, a lot of personnel turnover. You know, you don't have, you know, on offense, you have the same quarterback. On defense, you know, there's not that one player that kind of stabilized everything. You know, the Ravens have good continuity with some of their veterans, right? And that should help. But, you know, given that that is a normal thing to regress, like the concern is, will that be much more exaggerated given the new defensive coordinator with less experience?
You know, I think that's a very legitimate concern, first of all. And I've never heard it as well stated as what you just said. And in particular, the turnovers being highly variable is a big one. I'll say also they had a huge sack year last year that is unreplicatable, probably. They're going to try and do things that will, you know, I think aid the cornerbacks in the same way they did in the last year under McDonald, but that will be, I think, very, very difficult to replicate. I think you're right that it's a situation that absolutely screams out regression, probably on both sides of the ball, honestly. I think they'll probably regress on the offense as well. And you know, some of this, don't get me as a Debbie Downer here, because I think the Ravens have a really fine football team. The problem was they had one of the greatest football teams of all time last year. And, you know, that's what they're stepping back from. Yes, they fell short in the AFC Championship. They otherwise historically performed against a wide spate of very good football teams, had the most wins ever in an NFL season by against winning teams, against teams that finished with winning records. So their expectations of themselves are so high. You think what's going on in the offense with all the changes, I think regression is kind of inevitable there. And I'm going to make a kind of a double point here in response to this. I don't think the pass defenses can be good from a scheme situation, can be as good, or that the pass rush is going to be good. And the two are so inexorably linked, I don't think I can really separate them necessarily. So I'll just say them at once. That, you know, they showed a bunch of too high looks last year. They were very successful doing that. And can they or start with that? Yes, probably. He can probably do that part of it. In terms of the pass rush, they're working with one less big weapon than they had last year. Van Noy hopefully will be as good as he was, and he's getting older, so at some point he's going to get old very quickly. I think Owe is probably going to be a little bit better than he was last year, and he had a very good year. All the people are saying Owe is a bust, you're full of crap. He had a very good year from a pressure standpoint last year, contributed a lot to Matabike's sack total, and really solidified that rush end position from where he was. But they're short Jadeveon Clowney. And I don't know about you, Randy, but I was a big fan of using the Derrick Henry money to keep Clowney. He would have been the player that I would have taken. As it turns out, they signed for very similar money. Where would you have been on that?
You know, it's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I can totally see that. Yeah. I was never like, you know, getting Derrick Henry wasn't something where I was like, oh my God, we got Derrick Henry, we're winning the Super Bowl. You know, obviously he's a good player. Hopefully he can keep playing that well as he ages, you know, especially this season. Maybe pairing him with Lamar will even open up some opportunities for him. I guess you never know what it's going to cost for Clowney or whatever. I could definitely see the argument for bringing Clowney back to secure the defense. Maybe they think that, you know, Ojabo is going to do the job next year, you know, or maybe they think they can find another guy at the last minute. Like, you know, they have a couple of times. Right. So I could see the argument either way. You know, I you want me to take a stance? I'm probably okay with the Derrick Henry signing, but I see the valid point of, you know, keeping Clowney around, because he was excellent, and, you know, it way exceeded expectations when we brought him in last year. So we'll see, you know, what else they can do, you know, between now and.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you, most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
In the beginning of the season, you know, and that's another thing I wonder with Orr, you know, the Ravens defense was so good last year. Would that entice anybody to kind of come here for a little bit cheaper? Any like kind of veteran cuts or anything like that that are available? Or are they going to want to go play with McDonald in Seattle now? So, yeah.
Yeah. Let me address that one for a second, because, you know, one of the places where the Ravens, I believe, are still shorthanded is in the half field safety role. So, people might hear your comment and think, oh, he's talking about a pass rusher. I'm not even sure they have another room for another pass rusher on this team with, you know, Tavius Robinson and Harrison, and then four guys, including Adisa Isaac, and the three we think will maybe their more significant pass rushers this year, including Ajabo. That's already six outside linebackers. Those guys are already going to be fighting for game day activations. Now, you could cut Ajabo, you could cut somebody else, maybe you could trade Tavius Robinson, maybe if you really didn't see how he was going to fit into your long time plan. But it's, you know, the Ravens are already stocked in terms of the number of bodies. If they had an injury, sure, they can go out and replace somebody with that. But already I think they're a little loaded. But getting back to your point, it's a really good one about, hey, wouldn't you want to play for the Baltimore Ravens defense? I think that has generally been the case. And it's been, you know, something that the Ravens have been able to successfully go out and get pass rushers by. What if they wanted to get that available free safety? There's a portion of what's going on right now tells me the Ravens are waiting for the market to fall in line at safety. And they will get their guy, but it'll happen at the last second. And I don't think they need a strong safety type. So Jamal Adams is the wrong guy for the Ravens. I think they need a back end guy with a free safety background who's willing now to play a, you know, 50 or 60% of the snaps on the back end as a, you know, not necessarily a starter even in games, but to take on that Geno Stone role.
Okay. Yeah. So you see that as kind of playing with Marcus Williams and having Kyle in the nickel then in that. Yeah. Yeah. And I think Geno Stone is another kind of big loss. You know, he was very good for much of the year last year, kind of out of nowhere, you know, a little bit. So I think if they can find somebody to really replace that, I mean, especially when you, I mean, I guess you know, I don't know Marcus Williams' injury history before the Ravens, but he's certainly had some issues since we've had him. But hopefully, you know, that's a one-time thing. But yeah, I mean, you can always use more depth in the secondary. I think we learn that every year.
Yeah, they had guys that were around on the fringe of the practice squad and the roster, Andrews and DHC, who ended up starting the game for the Texans in the playoffs.
Right, right.
So they had guys who were in that role, who were veterans. They might not have been the ideal guy. I think they probably have the chance for the pick of the litter this year. And one of the places where the Ravens are bare right now is they don't have a backup to Marcus Williams. There's nobody on the team who's a backup to Marcus Williams. Even if they brought back Darrell Worley, I don't really think he'd be that guy. I think he fits the split field role very well, but I don't see him as a single high guy or a guy you'd want to replace Williams for an extended period of games. For that reason, additionally, if you're a veteran free agent safety, whether you're 28 or you're 31 or wherever you are along the age curve, and you say, boy, I'd really like to continue playing and I'd like a chance to revitalize my career, maybe if you're on the younger side of that group, Baltimore would seem like a really good place to play for that combination of, hey, there's a halftime role here and it could become a full-time role if anything happens to Marcus Williams as it did last year.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's you know, the players that you get to play with the Ravens, it's a great supporting cast to kind of boost you. You know, when you look next to Kyle Hamilton or Marlon Humphrey or even Brandon Stevens now. So yeah, I think it should be enticing to anybody who becomes available.
I wanted to segue into one more point that's kind of similar to that is McDonald did a wonderful job of using the spare parts he had to build a great machine last year. And, you know, Ronald Darby was a guy that I don't think even really projected to be a starter at all. I think they really, you know, first of all, Rock Ya-Sin was projected to be the starter, which ended up being far off the mark. Right. And they went to Darby and got outstanding play. Now, Ronald Darby is a guy who twice replaced Kyle Fuller at slot corner for the Broncos, I believe. So it's a strange interweaving with past Ravens that he's had over the years. But McDonald really was excellent at managing a shorthanded defense. And I really wonder if that's something Orr is going to be as good at doing on the fly. I think back to one other thing that happened that's along these lines is, remember the 2004 game of the week against the Jets that was done after the fact, that was like a precursor to Sound FX where all the audio was taken from the field?
I think I've seen some of those on NFL Network. Yeah.
It's you know, seen Sound FX or whatever. By the way, go back and take a look at Game of the Week, Jets Ravens 2004, and you'll see one of the great videos of all time. So 10 years ahead of its time in terms of what it was doing in terms of the game. And it really, really became the series Sound FX later. But the one of the things they did is the Ravens had a number of injuries in the secondary. And you can hear, because Billick is mic'd up, him getting more upset about that. And Mike Nolan, the defensive coordinator, having to come up with a solution for that on the fly. And he gets on the phone, because he's a Booth defensive coordinator. He gets on the phone and he goes, you know, give me Bart Scott. And Bart Scott gets on the line. He goes, hey, you're covering 83 in the slot next time we're on defense, kind of thing. And that was Wayne Krabet, who was eating the Ravens alive that year. It was just a great scene to watch an in-game adjustment to that as we're going on. Scott was like, yeah, no problem, kind of thing. It's just one of these things. So many great moments in that video. If for younger fans who have never seen that, I realize now it's 20 years ago. So I act as if everybody's seen the same videos that I have over the years. Go watch that. Do yourself a favor. It's out there on YouTube all the time, pretty much. It gets taken down, then it gets put up again, kind of thing. But good. 2004 Ravens Jets Game of the Week.
That's interesting. I'll have to check that out. That sounds pretty cool.
there's a lot of other stuff. Raback, at one point, the Jets defenders trying to get up off the ground, but he pushes down on his groin. And you can see it happen, and he's, you know, his reaction to it is funny. That's about all he was mic'd up for the whole game. And then Demps and Reed play rock, paper, scissors at one point for who's going to blitz. And that's another thing. And then Ed Reed has the big interception to turn the game around, basically. And Herm Edwards' reaction to that on the sideline is absolute gold.
Is that the one in the end zone?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
No, that's Ed Reed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's great.
Yeah. So it's definitely worth seeing. So anyway, that's what I said. Any other points you want to make?
Well, yeah, on that using this spare parts, I think that kind of goes back to something we talked about earlier with the coaches departing, right? And like, you know, how much of that is the defensive coordinator like making those adjustments in the game and determining who to use or what the right role is for people, and how much of that is the position coaches, you know, coaching them up and suggesting things to that coach. So, you know, I guess again, that we'll see how that shapes out this year. You know, the one thing with Orr, I wonder, that might be, you know, maybe a positive is, you know, he obviously has a close relationship with the players. He's not that far removed from being a player. So you wonder if he might be a little bit more of that motivational, like players coach kind of thing, more so than maybe McDonald was.
He's very relatable. I think that McDonald, intellectual, certainly as a coach, and somebody who I think had the right teaching attitude to be relatable. I think that teaching, treating these players as adults and treating them at here's what the defense is trying to do as a whole, and take a look at this, and then here's your part within that. I think that was very well done. And that's the first time I remember the Ravens ever trying to do it that way. I think that worked out well, but I think you're generally right that former players who are not too far removed from the league are the most relatable naturally. And Anthony Weaver had that in spades. Anthony Weaver, you know, definitely a guy who gets right in there and mixes it up with the defensive lineman in a very impressive way. So I think you're right. It's certainly true. I'll come up with one more here for Orr that I think is potentially an issue for him specifically, is that he benefited from being under Pease in a committed nickel scheme. Okay, so committed nickel, meaning that they keep two inside linebackers on the field for almost every down. The other defensive coordinators before and after were not committed nickel guys. So Martindale, was willing to use the dime again. Pease, won his first 5 years, only played 3% dime snaps during that entire period. This last year, he finally played Anthony Levine a little bit, but his first 5 years, basically no dime snaps. I wonder if Orr is going to ride Simpson longer than he should because he wants him to be a three down linebacker. Simpson is a second year player. We don't know who he is. Not really, because he's hardly played at all. Right. We've seen some good flash, but is it fair to say he's the committed nickel answer, or do you want Orr continually thinking about, do I really need to put in a dime back, even if it costs me a little bit of my relationship with Trenton Simpson?
Right. Yeah. And you probably know the statistics. I don't know. I don't think we played much dime last year with Queen and Roquan out there. And obviously you expect there's going to be some drop off from Queen to Trenton. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting question. And another thing that goes along with that is, you know, how are teams going to counter what we did last year? Right. Cause you know, now that they had a whole year of seeing what we did, you know, if let's say Orr follows, you know, tries to follow similar philosophy to what McDonald was doing, you know, the rest of the league's going to react to that, and they're going to come up with things to beat that scheme, to beat Kyle Hamilton in the slot or whatever it is. So I think it will be interesting to see if he's, you know, goes back to his playing days and kind of is more focused on that kind of alignment, or if he's, you know, more adaptable to use, you know, different personnel given the situation.
Yeah. There are some choices which kind of get made for you by your personnel. Right now, the Ravens, for example, have kind of a limited set of outside linebacker pass rushers. You hope for, if you're hoping for David Ojabo to be your number three pass rusher, you're already kind of hoping. You're already making hope your strategy. You know, maybe Adisa Isaac is the guy. Maybe Chuck Smith works more miracles, and Tavius Robinson suddenly becomes a pass rusher. You know, it could be. There are other avenues for the Ravens still to have good outside linebacker pass rush, but I don't think they have such a surplus of pass rushing talent there that they'll necessarily get away from the good 3-2 situation they've never had before on the inside. Never once in Ravens history have they had three guys who could rush the passer from the inside like they have right now with Matt Ibike, Travis Jones, and Michael Pierce. So I think they're sticking with that. I think they will stick with that if those guys obviously remain healthy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes sense. And yeah. I mean, that, yeah. I mean, getting Matt Ibike come back was a huge win for us, I think.
Randy, absolute pleasure talking over this with you. Great discussion, much shorter than I expected, given the list of comments you know we had in the production meeting and how long we thought this might go. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, so I'm JRMorgan16 on Twitter. I write occasionally for Drew's Morning Dish blog, usually a weekly Orioles column and some soccer columns, U.S. national team kind of things.
All right. Excited about the Orioles. Is a big trade deadline deal looming for them?
I think it has to be. I think, you know, we need pitching. I mean, with Bradish and Means going down, I think we need a starting pitcher, whether it's a back end guy to kind of help us get through the season or, you know, somebody who could start game three of a playoff series. And you know, I don't want to go too down that rabbit hole, but, you know, next season's a concern too with Bradish out and, you know, Burns probably not back. So I expect they'll do at least one move for a starting pitcher and probably something for a reliever too. But man, it's great times, you know. I mean, great season last season, top of the league again right now. So it's very exciting.
Any real risk that any of the top prospects will be traded, whether that means Kerstad Mayo, Basayo, Holiday, any of those four?
So Holiday, I think the consensus is it's not going to happen. I think Kerstad, Kowser, Basayo, Mayo. So I did a column kind of ranking these tiers of like last week. And I had Basayo and Mayo in the only trading those guys if they get a controllable starter back. So you know, Crochet, you know, some of those guys.
All right. I'm going to go on record right now before the trade deadline here that I absolutely hate putting a premium valuable on controllable years for pitching. And this is a team that's just been through four Tommy John surgeries in the last 12 months, right? So So you know, when you put a premium, it's true, pitching can be very hard to find and whatnot. But I think you either get it at the point you need it for the time you need it at rental cost, or you get it at the prospect level and try and develop those guys as they did with Povich and some of the other guys they acquired, Seth Johnson and others. But I really hate paying for controllable years on an already star player.
I'm mostly in agreement with you there, Ken. I, you know, given the last couple of seasons, I almost think it's silly to trade, you know, major league ready, position player talent for a pitcher, because it's like you're basically saying, I'm going to get this guy a year and a half you take out of whatever he's going to have, because they're going to have Tommy John almost, like, I think that goes also to paying, you know, elite pitchers too. Although I think Corbin Burns might be an exception, but I don't know that we'll pay him. I'd like him to. So I get what you're saying. I don't know that there's any rentals out there that are going to be that piece to put us over the top in the playoffs, right? Because there isn't really a rental starting pitcher that's like a number one right now.
Flaherty. I don't really want Jack Flaherty back. But is he a 1-year rental, or is he signed on a multi-year deal?
Okay. He's a 1-year rental. Yep. So okay. I have a hard time seeing them going down that road again after what happened last year. There's a few, I'm trying to remember, you know, I went through this last week in the article, but you know, there's a few other guys that are, you know, kind of a tier down, I think, that could, you know, could maybe start a game three. But again, I also have the concern for next year. If we, you know, it'd be nice if we just paid Corbin Burns, I guess, but you know, we got to fill out the rotation next year. You know, Povich, maybe McDermott is doing pretty well in AAA, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they do either way.
Right. I don't want them to pay Burns if they're going to have to match a 7-year, $35 million AAV from the Dodgers or Yankees or somebody else. I mean, if that's the number, then he has to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And like I said, paying anyone is very risky at this point as a pitcher. He seems to be one of the exceptions, but you never know. But you know, also the other thing we don't know is what, you know, what's Rubenstein willing to pony up? You know, it's not my money and there's no salary cap. So that's the one difference between baseball and football, right? But
then it you know, when with the salary cap as a season ticket holder, I can say that is my money.
Right.
That is
right,
my money.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. All right, outstanding. Randy, really appreciate you coming on. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. In particular, if you want to be part of this concern series, you saw the great job Randy did here. Don't be intimidated by it. I'd love to have you on, talk about whatever your concern is schematically. Maybe it's a position group. Maybe it's a depth concern, whatever it might be. DM me again. They're always open. I'll get back to you very quickly, and we'll talk about scheduling that episode. Randy, total linear time we took getting this episode to recording was how much from the first contact? 3 or 4 days?
Oh, yeah. If that, yeah.
Yeah. So it's these things happen very quickly. And I think, you know, it's not really the preparation job you think it is. I think, you know, putting down 4 or 5 bullet points is usually enough. Randy did a great job on that, as you heard on this episode. Randy, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Ken. Been a fan of the podcast for a few years. I'm honored to be on.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.